If you believe, assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to 2A Radio. Thanks for joining in. We have the RBN winner coming at you later in the show, so everybody stay tuned for that. That is the holiday giveaway we're doing just through the end of the month. So this is the very last week for that. So that is coming up soon. Now, most of you, I got to tell you what I've been doing a little bit over the last couple days. Most of you are familiar with my buddy Ed Winchester. He sat in August. We did a week's worth of shows together. Sat as my very special co-host. And one of the things Ed does for a living, his main deal, is he does mine reclamation in and around the southwestern states, mostly in California. And when I mean mine reclamation, what they've got is they've got some 45,000 estimated mines in the state of California that are abandoned. We're talking shafts down on the that go down in the hall, or an adit that goes into a hill. And Ed is partners in a company. He runs the crews that go out and they secure these mines in any number of different means. Well, not all of them are easy to get to. So I helped out Ed he hired a helicopter company to come in and grab a whole bunch of gear and pick up the gear and the crew and fly them out to this mine. And then when we were done doing a bunch of concrete work and welding and metal work, some of the stuff we were able to weld soon enough that the chopper's able to fly the heavy welding equipment back out. And then we did a bunch of concrete work, and then we had to pack out. And I got to tell you, at 8,600 feet elevation, we're at 8,650. I'm whipped. I got it. 8,650 feet worth of elevation. And a lot of heavy gear. Every muscle in my body is absolutely sore as can possibly be. Every one of them. And I am headed to go get a massage later today, which is something I rarely ever do. Maybe once a year, maybe once every other year. Today is the day. I am dying. We had to pack all of this gear out 2 miles at, 8,600 feet. I'm sorry, not 86, 68, 6,800 feet. It seemed like 86. And, man, I am just whipped. But I got to tell you, at least I had my Glock 17 on me, which I was very happy about because it did get very dusty, very dirty, and it was still able to run. So, very happy about that. When we, you know, I talk a lot about my 1911s, love those kinds of guns. You got to carry what works and what's good for the environment in which you're in when you're carrying a gun. And for me, a Glock happened to fit the bill. So we were on time, on par, everything was good. I am absolutely tired. I am absolutely sore. I slept last night for 9.5 uninterrupted hours, and it felt like it was about 4. I am just plain beat. Remember, folks, we've got the winner coming up for you. We're going to announce that in the next segment. And in addition, during the break, if you get a chance, go online to www.2aradio.com and check out those Thanksgiving recipes. Be right back right after the break. And all I need is you. I'm calling. And all I scream for you. I'm falling. I'm falling. I'm falling. Show me.
Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is live. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys. Welcome back. So, all month long, month of November, and it's winding down, RBN has gotten together with the RBN sponsors for a daily giveaway. Today's winner is Julie Radarmi, R-O-D-A-R-M-E. Julie Radarmi of Eureka, California. You've won 2 half-ounce .999 fine silver from opencurrency.com. Go local, buy local. Barter is better. Your two tokens can be circulated in the 26,000 merchant-strong barter network, including the AG Trading Post, the nation's first store that refuses Federal Reserve notes, located in Dallas, Texas, and coming to a town near you very soon. Find out more online at www.opencurrency.com today. All right, folks. So, I happen to mention I was helping out Ed, and I also happen to mention that he does most of his work in California, and I also happen to mention I was carrying my Glock 17. So, in fact, yes, I was carrying my gun in California. And here's the really big crux of the deal. It was loaded. Ha ha, how about that? Because we were on private property. A lot of mines that Ed and his company, Frontier Environmental Go and Close, are on private property. This one happened to be. So, because it was on private property, I didn't have to go by any of these ridiculous laws that California decides to put out that keeps people from being able to defend themselves. And it was interesting because I was getting into a conversation with Ed's former law enforcement out of California, and we were talking about a few things. And I said, you know, it's interesting here because any magazine for any removable magazine for any semi-automatic handgun or rifle or anything like that that holds more than 10 rounds in California is referred to as a high-capacity magazine, when in fact the actual term is a legislatively mandated reduced-capacity magazine. Okay, that would be the 10-rounder. The other one, that if it's, say, 15 or 20 rounds, would be a standard-capacity magazine, whatever the gun was originally designed for the gun, standard capacity. In California, they call it high-capacity. It's more than 10 rounds. So I said, you know, having that magazine in a gun in California would be considered a felony, right? Carrying a knife of a certain type or style that is concealed is also a felony. However, carrying a concealed handgun in California is a misdemeanor. Now, as Ed points out, there are other felony provisions that they can try to tack on, but the main offense itself, if you're carrying concealed in California without a concealed weapons permit, on the books, it's a misdemeanor. Literally, something that you can be cited for. Not that you probably would in California. It's very draconian. But yet, if you have, say, like in my Glock, I had a 17-round magazine. If that 17-round magazine is in the gun, that would have been the magazine in the gun would have been a much... Just possession of that magazine could have been a much stiffer penalty than if I were just carrying a gun concealed. Now, all this, we're just going through theoretically how all this stuff works out. Not really theoretically, but just the way the law is written. So it was pretty interesting just to go through the motions on, wow, you know, actually carrying a loaded gun is a much lesser offense than carrying a concealed knife or carrying that gun if it has a magazine that holds more than 10 rounds. Just to give you an idea of how stupid the laws are there. Now, we had Shalene Nightingale on the show last Friday, who is an independent conservative candidate for the governor of California. And a very nice lady, well-informed, been in California the majority of her life, running on really kind of an underdog ticket. So I encourage you, by the way, Shalene is C-H-E-L-E-N-E, Shalene Nightingale, N-I-G-H-T-I-N-G-T-O-N, G-A-L-E. Shalene Nightingale, and I believe it's Nightingale for Governor, is her site. I had many listeners spelling, I can't find her name. That's because you were spelling it like S-H-E-L-L-E-N. That's not right. C-H-E-L-E-N-E. So she did get back to me. Shalene got back to me. I had offered on the air if she were to put together a course, like a one-day course or a couple of one-day courses for an event for a fundraiser for her campaign in California where people could come out, learn how to use some handguns. or really whatever the heck they want to put together, I would come out there and donate my time to actually run a single two-day course or a couple of one-day courses for gun familiarization, and I would do my best to find other qualified volunteers to come out and help instruct. I have a pretty vast network, and I've already had a few people that I know contact me that listen to the show and said, hey, if you need an extra hand, let me know, and these are qualified people. So a lot of people have stepped up to the plate for that. Also remember, I am still in the process of trying to secure the dates with this being Thanksgiving week and a lot of stuff going on. It's a little tough to secure the get anything done this week. But to get the date secured for the 2A Radio Defensive Handgun course coming up planned for March, it'd be a 3-day course where you can learn the foundation and a little beyond of being able to carry concealed and be able to defend your life or that of a loved one against anyone intent on bringing you death or serious bodily injury. And I will tell you this, when you are done with this 3 days worth of instruction, and in these 3 days, considering what I've done and my background, you're going to have more efficient techniques, and you'll have them down better than any 4 or 5 day course held anywhere else. You're going to get some really excellent, incredibly streamlined building block formed of training. I got a lot of experience in doing this kind of a thing, and this is really the best way to learn. And different organizations I've been involved with before, where the building block format was the idea of how things were to go, they would later get changed around, jumbled up. However, this is really getting back to the true building block foundation. So that's the way this course is going to go. And I will tell you this, you will be vastly better after these 3 days of probably 19 out of 20 people who carry a gun for a living and have done so for years. You will have a better understanding of how the gun operates. You'll have a better understanding of gun handling, a better understanding of marksmanship, and a much better understanding of gun safety, how to handle the gun in a safe manner. Quite honestly, if you take everybody in this country that carries a gun as part of their job, and you ask them, give me the universal firearm safety rules, I bet you that you're probably going to find 90% that have no idea. And the 10% that do, half of them aren't going to quite get it right, but at least they have the idea of it. All right? If you follow the 4 universal firearm safety rules, as outlined by Jeff Cooper, you're going to do just fine without ever having a negligent discharge. Now, we get away from the term accidental discharge because you'll almost never find it to be an accident. You'll find it to be negligence by not following the safety rules. Now, when I went through the Appleseed project, what was it, weekend before last, about 10 days ago, I guess, is when we polished up, they have, you know, their safety rules, and the NRA has their safety rules. And if you buy a Remington, you end up with the 10 Commandments of Firearm Safety. If you buy a Steyr, you get another set of firearm safety. If you buy a Glock, you got another. Here's one of the things. This is a mission I would like to set out on, and that is this. Having the same basic set of safety rules for the entire firearms community. And after you get that main basic set, if you want to add in some of your own stuff for liability, if you're a gun manufacturer, an ammo manufacturer, something like that, then add your stuff afterwards. But to have everyone have the same 4 universal firearm safety rules is really something that I would love to see happen. And I don't know, I may actually venture into trying to get this done one of these days, is to try to get everybody on the same page and understand why it should be on the same page. Everybody should be able to follow the same safety rules. I've been involved in enough organizations that they ask me what their firearm safety rules are, and I've got to think what their mantra is to get the answer right. what I end up doing is I always default to the four universal ones. That's it. Oh, no, no. Well, you know, in the NRA, we've got three. Now, Appleseed Project has four or five. Then we have the universal ones, which Jeff Cooper came up with, which there's four. That's all you need. And again, the Ten Commandments that Remington puts out. Just, it's crazy. It's a little nutty. Everything ends up boiling down to pretty much the same stuff. But we need to get it together, guys. I mean, really. When we talk about safety in the automotive industry, everybody's on the same page. And I'm sure that the NRA would want to have everybody following their rules because that's the way they see it. They're the NRA. But the NRA is going to have to learn that their three rules don't cover everything that the four rules of Jeff Cooper, the four universal rules, really do. So we're actually going to cover those when we come back from this next break coming up in another, I don't know, half minute or so. So when we come back, we're going to cover the four universal firearm safety rules and really why. Okay, why they are the way they are and how it's going to affect you really in an operational standpoint of how to handle your own gun, how you can be your own worst enemy. So stay tuned. More to come, guys. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearm to us. Right now, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
And welcome back, guys. Okay, so firearm safety rules. As Jeff Cooper came up with these, Colonel Jeff Cooper, the guy that started Gunsight Academy, Gunsight Ranch, Gunsight, rule number one. Treat every gun as if it's loaded. Now, actually, Jeff's originally was, all guns are always loaded. That's rule one. It's been adapted a little bit over the years to treat all guns as if they're loaded. Because, really, the way to get better with the gun is to practice with it dry, empty. Some people call it dry firing. Other organizations refer to it as dry practice. It is the gun is empty and unloaded. And that's really the way to practice to get better with the thing. You can do it at home with a safe downrange area, put up a target, do your dry practice, take the target down. Because really that's where you get better. A lot of people believe that they need to fire a couple hundred rounds or more every week or a couple times a month to keep their chops up. That's not true. Really, improvement comes with dry practice. Going live is really where you just reinforce that the dry practice is working. You're a little more accurate. Maybe you're a little faster. You know, maybe you're a little bit more streamlined in your technique. There's less excess body movement, whatever you're doing. All kinds of different things. Whatever you're trying to dry practice out. Whatever you're trying to dry fire out. I don't really don't like the term dry fire. I like dry practice because, you know, as has been said, you certainly cannot fire a dry, empty gun. They're, you know, kind of mutually exclusive terms here to coin a phrase. So treat all guns as if they're loaded. If you keep the respect of a gun that it's loaded and keep it in your head, have a mindset that the gun is actually loaded, that right there should do away with having what we talked about earlier called a negligent discharge. Right? Rule two, don't point the muzzle at anything you're not willing to destroy. Don't cover anything. Don't point the gun, the barrel, the muzzle, the very end of the barrel where the bullet comes out and meets the environment, it's called the muzzle, forward or the front sight. Don't point the muzzle at anything you're not willing to destroy. So, often with a handgun, what you end up violating is rule two with is usually yourself, your own worst enemy. You might cover your support side hand. If you're trying to get the gun in or out of the holster, you might cover your leg. You know, there's all kinds of things you might cover on your own body, which is where we end up with people who end up shooting themselves. Especially, say, to disassemble a Glock, you need to clear the gun out, make sure it's clear, then press the trigger, and then disassemble it. Well, some people have done that with their support hand in front of the muzzle, violating Rule 2, and then press the trigger. Having not done a chamber check, they blast a hole through the center of their hand. Bad deal. Happened in Florida to a federal agent about 2 or 3 years ago now. About 3 years ago. So Rule 2, don't cover anything with the muzzle you're not willing to destroy. All right, Rule 3, which is very important. Now, Jeff Cooper's was originally keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you're ready to shoot. Now, that's been adapted a little bit over the years to keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. Sometimes your sights might not be on target, and that allows for close combat shooting and close combat practice, such as if you take like a more advanced level tactics course or the handgun combat master's course. You end up shooting from an area called close contact or doing a technique known as speed rock. If you've seen the movie Collateral with Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx, there is a scene in there where two street thugs come up and they take a briefcase belonging to Tom Cruise. He comes out, catches them, and stops them. They end up coming up. One's got a gun. I don't remember if the other guy had a knife or what. So Tom Cruise ends up pushing the gun away, pulling his gun out, it's just above the holster, right around the lower part of his rib cage. Rocks back, fires two rounds into the guy's chest, steps back, fires two rounds into the other guy's chest, and that's really a technique, is to be able to shoot from that low. Now, you're not going to be on your sights. You are going to have a body index, so that close. So keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. That's Rule 3. And Rule 4, be aware of your target and what's in line with it. Not just be aware of your target and what's beyond it, because there's a lot of stuff between your muzzle and the target in the foreground that could get shot, and you need to be aware of that too. I could be aware of my target, and what my target might be some dirtbag that's trying to shoot me, and beyond him is a cinder block wall. Okay, well, that might be a good, be aware of my target, what's in line, or, and what's beyond it. That's kind of a, I think that's an NRA rule. But between them is a parking lot full of shoppers going to the mall, that's a problem. And the beware of your target, what's behind it, that rule doesn't work out so good. Beware of your target and what's in line with it, what's in line of the path of the bullet. That's really what you want to have, okay? So treat all guns as if they're loaded. Don't point the gun at anything you're not willing to destroy. Keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot, and beware of your target and what's in line with it. Follow those rules. Those are the four basic rules, and that's what I would like to see the entire firearms industry follow. And if you want to start having some subsets, like additional rules by Remington, or additional rules by, Ammotech or whatever, fine. Add those as addendums. However, I believe we should all have the same four universal rules. All right, guys, we've got more coming up. Stay tuned. We're only halfway through today. Take a chance. Go to 2aradio.com. Check out those recipes. I'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
And welcome back. There's been a little bit of hubbub coming out of Pennsylvania where an off-duty officer fatally shot a young man during a large street fight this last Saturday night. And the police said that the officer had been trying to break up a street brawl around 11 o'clock when he was attacked, which led him to shoot an unarmed kid, young adult, 21 years old, once in the chest. Now, evidently, this has brought up a big deal because I guess this cop lived in the area, from what I understand, and he kind of throwed his weight around like, I'm a cop, I'm a big badass, and, you know, I'll mace you, I'll brandish my gun, whatever, I want peace around here. So there's a little bit of, the pot's been stirred over this. Now, can you get away with shooting an unarmed person? Well, that all depends on the situation. I'm going to give you, and this is merely by recollection. I don't have anything in front of me to tell me this. I'm just going by recollection of the story. Arizona, the state of Arizona, went to a shall-issue concealed weapons system in about 1995, I think it was. Maybe 93. The very first case of somebody, if I remember correctly, was the very first case of somebody with an Arizona CCW using his gun to shoot somebody to defend themselves was an armed guy shooting an unarmed guy. Now, I'm going to do my best to go from recollection. I heard this story, you know, better part of 15 years ago, 13, 14 years ago. So I'm going to try to go by recollection, and I might be off by a little bit if I am. Just understand the crux of the story is that an armed guy shot an unarmed guy. There was a large outdoor gathering of sorts. What it was, I don't remember. It might have been an outdoor concert, I think. And there's a group of people hanging out, and there was a smaller statured guy. He was not a very big guy who had his CCW. And this was a large group of people that happened to be hanging out, you know, 20-plus, 30-plus people. And, of course, not everybody there knows everyone else, but everybody there knows at least a few other people there, and now this group is together. So you got a bunch of people that you don't know, some people that you do know. One of the people that was there was a buddy of this guy who just got a CCW recently and brought it up. Not the guy that had the CCW. He wasn't bringing it up. He doesn't need to let everybody know that he's carrying concealed. The other guy's talking about it. So one of the guys that was there was this really big, brawny, brawly guy. And evidently, as it turns out, he was somewhat of a very loud and mean drunk. The guy had been drinking. Again, as I said, I believe it was an outdoor concert. So it's like a big picnic setting sort of a thing. Not like in a stadium, like an all-day like outdoor event sort of deal where people can walk around and go to the beer cart and, you know, they got all the portable Johns and, you know, go grab some bratwurst or a sandwich, whatever. So as it turns out, as the day progresses, this guy, this big guy, decides to start picking on this littler guy. What do you think? You're a big man with the gun, pushing and shoving him around. And finally, it turns more violently physical. So the smaller guy that has the gun is now in a position where he is outsized and outweighed by somewhere around 120 pounds of a big, mean, drunk guy that is now in the process of whipping his ass. So is he in imminent fear of potential death or serious bodily injury from this guy? Because if he is, he's justified in using his gun for self-defense, which is exactly what he did. And the big guy that attacked him died. Well, the police arrested him. It went all the way to court. He was actually being prosecuted for, I don't remember what the charge was. I think it might have been manslaughter. Maybe secondary. I don't remember exactly what it was. But the defense called the coroner in. Not the medical examiner, but the coroner. And sat the coroner up there. And said, have you ever had cases? Well, they had some medical professionals as well. They had some emergency room doctors and trauma surgeons and stuff in there that said, have you ever had anybody resembling the size and stature of the defendant coming in with any serious bodily injury of somebody just with their bare hands, roughly the size of the victim, the dead guy, coming through your hospitals? Well, yeah, we did. We have many, many cases. Then they bring the coroner in, and they say to the coroner, have you ever had anybody about the size of the defendant come through dead for an autopsy, and death was perpetrated by an unarmed person the size of the victim, the big dead guy. Yes. Matter of fact, here's many cases. Well, it wasn't long after that the judge said, you know what? We're done with this case. I order the defendant released and his concealed weapon, his handgun returned to him, his property returned to him, and his concealed weapons license reinstated. Smack of the gavel, done. So with that in mind, could this cop in Pennsylvania have any sort of similar argument against this 21-year-old William Panis Jr., Billy Panis, that he shot once in the chest? You know, it's really tough to say. Now, they're saying, again, that this cop used to go out there and, you know, maze, you know, throw his OC, his what is it, oleoresin capsicum, is that what OC stands for? His pepper spray. He's out there with his pepper spray, spraying people occasionally, allegedly, having his gun out, like maybe down at the ready or whatever, shouting commands, allegedly, in a neighborhood that I believe that he lives in. So, some people are claiming he just overdid it. Now, it's almost as though he was looking to get involved in a situation. That's the claim. Now, who knows? Really, unless you're in the middle of that, you don't know. Could this cop have avoided that? Really, guys, a lot of times that police are involved in shootings, and having been a law enforcement officer, I was a patrol officer with Las Vegas Metro back in the mid-90s, having been in those shoes, having walked a mile in those shoes, oftentimes it is true that cops can avoid the shooting that they were in had they avoided escalating or being involved in the escalation of a particular event. Probably the single most important thing I learned in the police academy, what I went through, was when you're dealing with the public and somebody's amped up, let them vent. If they're going to stand up and they're going to start, you know, cussing and screaming about one thing or another, they have a lot inside, a lot of pent-up emotion, let them vent. Until it gets to the point, or I shouldn't say until, unless it gets to the point where it is causing or can cause a worse situation. But if it's just verbal, and they're just, you know, waving their arms and this guy and that SOB and blah, 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 let them vent. Because once it's out, they're easier to deal with. And I say that's probably the single most important thing I've ever learned, because up to that point, I didn't really care to let people vent. And this is like before I was a cop. Somebody starts, you know, whining and crying their woe and starts like, look, we've got things to accomplish here. I don't really care about that. So what I was doing was I was adding to the stuff that they had to keep inside and would vent later. So as a cop, let them vent. Once they vent, okay, you got it out of your system? All right, let's deal with this. Because otherwise, if they still got it on their mind and they haven't got it out yet, well, things can get worse. So, not always, but certainly oftentimes, a high enough percentage of times where police use force, be it a taser, a stun gun, pepper spray, and then, of course, their own gun, their handgun, or even a shotgun, whatever it is, those sorts of things can be avoided if the police officer has the training and the ability to recognize where a potential event is going, and if they have the ability to change that or give an opportunity for it to be altered, such as if somebody's wanting to vent and they don't, and they just want to come over the top, look, I ain't got time for this. I am the authority, and you will do what I say. Or else. And then people decide, you know what? That is not the way I want to be spoken to. That's not the way I want to be handled in this situation. And quite honestly, Mr. To Protect and to Serve, who the hell do you think you are? These sorts of things are rattling around in the head, generally not as eloquently as I just put them. And then you end up with an issue. You have a problem. Now what we have is a cop trying to use force to subdue someone. Now that's not always the way that these force things work out. I'm just talking about the ones where in case an officer might be able to otherwise defuse it. Okay? So, it's when they don't defuse it that things can go bad. Such as the cases where we end up having a cop that threatens to use a taser on somebody if they don't comply. The person doesn't comply, the taser comes out. The taser doesn't work the way the cop intended it to work. It doesn't have the effect. So now what do? Well, there's only one level up for a lot of cops from there, and that is pull out the gun and shoot them. Now, why didn't they just pull out the gun and shoot them in the first place? Because the situation didn't warrant it. So now, the level of force is being upped by the police officer, not by the suspect or the citizen that they're dealing with. Chiming in on today, we have a caller from Texas. George, you're on line one. Welcome to 2A Radio.
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Always enjoy listening to your show.
Thanks, George.
You're good with coffee. Yeah, you know, the thing is, my dad was a retired cop. He passed away, God rest his soul. And, you know, the sheriff, the county sheriff in Brazoria County, Texas, you notice deputies do not carry tasers. And the reason why they don't carry tasers is because the county sheriff believes my deputies are trained adequately enough in communication and other skills where they train to de-escalate. They will never have to use the tasers. And our sheriff is trying to get the tasers out of the city cops because they've been known to use them when they were very unnecessary.
You know, George, I'm glad you bring that up because when I was a cop, tasers didn't exist. Stun guns existed, but we didn't have those. And I believe, it's my belief, that part of the reason they went to tasers is because the use of a baton, a PR-24 as it's called, just like that, what Rodney King got beat with just doesn't seem so politically correct to beat somebody up with. But these tasers are a bad deal. I got to tell you, I am happy to hear what you just said because we were armed with the same thing. The ability to try to defuse the situation and get people into compliance within whatever reason we were there without having to go to a taser.
Well, you know, the thing is, when I lived in Florida, they tried to... No, it's just I had a back brace on because I had a injury. And the cop wanted to tasered me, and it didn't work because it went into my back brace because I wouldn't let him search my car. And he tried to use it and say, well, I was not complying with his commands to step back while he searched my car when he didn't have no cause to search it. He was just looking for a fishing expedition, so he tased me and went in my back brace, and I just said, no dice.
Very interesting. That sounds pretty interesting. You said that was in Florida. It must have been years ago, I'm taking it.
No, actually, it was a couple of years ago.
A couple years back.
Well, the thing is, and that's why I came to Texas, because Florida, the law enforcement element in Florida is super police state. And, you know, it's more like they're being trained, like I say, if you don't talk and tell where you're going, you know, and stuff like that, they're going to, when it's your right to remain silent, they're saying it's obstruction of justice.
Now, you know, what's interesting, George, I'm glad you bring this up. This brings us into a slightly different topic, is the Supreme Court has said two different things, one in two different cases. One of them is, legally, all you have to provide a police officer is your full legal name. That's it, when asked, when they're investigating something. That's all you have to provide is your full legal name, by what the Supreme Court says. And it's easy enough to tell a cop that if it's a situation where you don't want to speak to them, is you can just say, look, Supreme Court says all I have to do is give you my full legal name and this is it. And then that's it. And when it comes to searching cars, it came out just earlier this year, I believe it was March of this year, it was June of this year, where the Supreme Court said the only time now that a police officer can search a car is of the following. If they believe that you are trying to dispose of evidence in which they are investigating a potential crime, or if you're going for a weapon which the officer believes will or could be used against them or someone else. And that's pretty much it. Otherwise, they're not allowed to search your car without consent, or if they arrest you and tow the car, They can't toss your car unless they get a search warrant now, because the court has said if you're arresting somebody, you certainly have time to fill out a request for a search warrant for probable cause. How about that?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is, I'll cap off with this one note. I remember when I was coming back from another county in Texas. Well, in Texas, they got a law saying any police officer, law enforcement, or jurisdictions within the state line. That means if he's dropped somebody off in jail that's being extradited in another county, he comes back, and he sees a crime, he can assist or whatever.
Same things in most states, actually, but yeah.
But anyway, but, you know, the county sheriff has the authority. And, well, I got stopped for a burnt-out taillight. I had the light bulb in my seat. I was just going to look for a place because I needed a little daylight to fix it. Well, anyway, a car from another jurisdiction tried stopping me. Well, I didn't pull over right away. I pulled into a convenience store. And the other reason why I waited to go into a store because it was a narrow shoulder, and I didn't want the officer getting clipped by a car going on the highway.
We're running down. Do you want to hold on and finish this story after the break?
Sure.
Okay, George, hold on. We're coming up on the break in just another minute here. So, everybody, what I want you to do is stick around. We're going to hear the rest of the story out of George, and then we're going to close out the show before heading into Thanksgiving tomorrow with special programming on RBN. Stay tuned after the break.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you won't run if this is not where you belong.
All right, guys, welcome back. So, George in Texas, you're back on.
Yes. But basically, I'm just saying this officer outside his jurisdiction, outside his county, thinks this law would help him go stop me on a burnt-out taillight. Well, like I say, I didn't stop for like about three-quarters to a quarter of a mile until I pulled into a store because, number one, I like to pull in places where it's well-lit and you have witnesses. And number two, the road had a narrow shoulder, and my dad was medically retired because he got clipped by a car doing a traffic stop.
Right.
But basically, I called the county sheriff, and the county sheriff came out there, and he basically sat there and said, if we need assistance and there's a felony or a misdemeanor taking place, you are not to engage the public passing through jurisdiction.
Interesting.
Huh. Because the county sheriff is the final authority.
That's true. He is. George, thanks very much for calling and chiming in, man. I appreciate it. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Best to you and your family.
Oh, God bless you.
Thanks. God bless you, too. Bye-bye. All right, folks. So, how are we going to go about this wonderful weekend, starting with Black Friday, after Thanksgiving tomorrow? Well, as soon as the shopping goes up, so do crimes. Such as assaults, essentially robberies of people trying to get what you've got. Holidays are coming up. Everybody needs something. If you can't afford it or don't feel like affording it, you might steal it from somebody else. So, 'tis the season to be generous. If someone is causing you imminently to fear for your life or serious bodily injury, yourself or a loved one, somebody with you, or even an innocent person right there in your immediate area, be generous. Ammo's cheap. Life is precious. Shoot him to the ground. Now, that's a quote by Gabe Suarez. Ammo's cheap. Life is precious. Shoot him to the ground. All right? Folks, I want you to be safe out there. I want to offer to you my Thanksgiving wishes. Thank you very much over these last many months of being my audience here on 2A Radio. I wish my best to you, your family, everyone who's going to be sharing Thanksgiving with you tomorrow. Hopefully some of you try out these recipes. If you do, the recipes on 2aradio.com. please shoot me an email. Let me know what you thought. Once you do, please don't send me a bunch of forwards. That's really getting, it's really filling up my inbox. It's really not good right now. But please, let me know if you liked any of those. That's really one of the things I'm trying to give back to you is all these wonderful recipes. So please, if you're able to use those, you do use them, let me know what you thought. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Stay tuned for the Global Research Hour next, followed by the Ernest Hancock Show. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedom? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.